So here we are at the UN studio in Geneva, and we are speaking about the 23rd International Meeting of Mine Action National Directors and United Nations Advisors. So basically, UNMAS is here, the United Nations Mine Action Service, in addition to Sarah Nigeri, who's a researcher from King's College in London, who has been looking at research into and the link between climate change and vulnerable populations affected by unexploded ordnance stuck in the ground and elsewhere. Welcome, everybody. I'm going to just dive in quickly, going to Richard Bulter, who is Program Manager for South Sudan with UNMAS. Richard, tell me the main thrust of the meeting here at the United Nations in Geneva. What are you hoping to achieve this week?
Well, simply putting the importance of mine action back on the map, reminding people there's a problem that exists around the world that is being addressed, but it needs constant support to keep us going. A mine-free world is achievable. We simply need to keep doing what we're doing.
Just talk me through what the process is. You go into a community in South Sudan. Can you give me a particular example of an area that you've cleared recently, how you've helped a community?
We're helping hundreds of communities every single day. We're going into villages where mines were laid possibly 30 or 40 years ago, where forests have grown up around them. People wander into those forests in search of natural resources to cut wood, to gather forest vegetables, and they blow themselves up. And we are working to render the ground safe. And the reality is the poorest of the poor go into minefields knowing they are taking a risk. A study in Cambodia showed 85% of mine victims knew they were in a minefield at the time they had their accident. But they also knew they were going to be hungry that night. And so they take the risk to go and get it. And not demining is not an option. People will still take the risk and go into the minefields. We need to clear those mines to make the land safe, just so people can start with a level playing field of being able to grow some food.
It is astonishing. It comes down to having to live from the day to day. And Edwin Fakemani, if I can come to you. Now, you were in Cambodia. Do you share Richard's experience there? Is that what you were finding in Cambodia? You're a program officer for UNMAS now, but you were working for a long time with UNDP, the UN Development Programme.
Yes. You actually see that people take risks. When they're hungry, they will try to go to the forest to find food. If they have pieces of land that are contaminated, they will try to farm it so that they can grow their rice. It's basically subsistence farming for everything there. And if they can't access the land, then they will take measures to go and see if they can actually get food.
What's your message to the conference this week?
There is a need for us to address this. There is hope. For example, specifically for Cambodia, 2025 is a goal for them. It can be achieved
to clear
all of known remaining landmines by 2025.
How many are we talking about?
There's still about 900 square kilometers worth of landmines, but
That sounds like a lot. I mean,
it is a lot.
And you say 2025, that's only 5 years.
It is a lot, but the government has actually committed themselves, you know. When I left Cambodia last year, they committed themselves that they will give 10% counterpart funding to any international funds that will come in for mine action. And UNDP has seen that in the sense that last year we got 10% of, that's about $200,000 last year from the Cambodian government, which is the first big step for them to taking responsibility for the mine problem that they have.
So there is progress, and hopefully by 2025. And quickly, back to Richard, you said that South Sudan continues to be contaminated by mines laid perhaps decades ago, but their goal is 2027 for total clearance?
2026. If the current peace can hold, if we can get access to all areas, then it's reasonable with current levels of funding, as long as they're maintained, that we will complete clearance by 2026. But ordnance will continue to appear for decades. There is still ordnance turning up across Western Europe that was fired over 100 years ago, being ploughed up in the fields of Belgium week after week. Now, that's the reality of any conflict-affected country.
But in the short term, you need sustained funding to help South Sudan, as many other countries need to decontaminate. Can I come quickly to you, Sarah Nigeri, from King's College London? You're a researcher, and you've been looking at the link between climate change and unexploded ordnance or landmines contamination. Can you tell me a bit about what you found?
I've been looking specifically at the post-conflict context. I've been looking at mine action and how that interrelates from a post-conflict peace-building framework. And the climate is something that I've come into recently, looking at how that is adding the levels of vulnerability. Because I was in Angola in September doing some work with the Geneva International Center for Humanitarian Demining on a research project. And what we saw there was that once fields are cleared, that the farmers there are grateful because, you know, clearance provides quite a lot of land. And what they're doing is resorting to the cut and slash methods of cultivation. Now, what that does to the environment is just, at the time, the fires in the Amazon were on, but in Angola, there was second highest fires when the satellite images were done. So while we can clear, and the farmers were saying yes, but the drought has impacted. So yes, the farm is being returned to the farmers, but there are other, beyond the mine action. And my take into that is, can we incorporate as a sector? Can we bring in other lessons for these people when we are out there with them saying, once we've cleared the farm, maybe there is a certain sense of responsibility in the ways we cultivate and all that. So integrating, being innovative in our approaches to dealing with communities to reduce their vulnerabilities.
Interesting. Yeah. So what you're calling for really is for a broader approach to helping communities once the areas are made safe. So I don't know, maybe I could turn to you, Bob Seddon. You're a threat mitigation officer with the UN Mine Action Service. You're doing a lot of work in Libya at the moment. I don't know how much access you have there, because we've had talks recently here in Geneva, in fact ongoing, between opposing parties fighting outside Tripoli to the south. How are you helping communities get safer and be free of this sort of scourge that must induce this bunker mentality among populations?
Yes, there are two real issues to address. Firstly, is that Libya has the world's largest uncontrolled ammunition stockpile. It is estimated that there are between 150,000 and 200,000 tonnes of uncontrolled munitions across Libya. And also what we've seen recently in the fighting which broke out in southern Tripoli in April of last year is the expenditure of ordnance and the threat posed by explosive remnants of war has increased. And sadly, many of the areas that were previously cleared of UXO have now been recontaminated as a result of the current fighting. Some specific concerns that we've got at the moment relate to some of the more complex munitions that the Libyans require assistance to dispose of. And the previous Gaddafi regime, for example, bought some quite complex missile systems that use toxic propellants. And these toxic propellants pose a very considerable threat to the environment and also to the Libyan people, which live in close proximity to their storage depots. So one of the projects that Unmask Libya has initiated with support from the German government is to safely dispose of some of these very hazardous liquid propellants in Libya.
Thank you, Bob, for that. Now, I'm going to turn to Lee, because you're the global communications honcho for UNMASS. Maybe you could tell me how many countries UNMASS is operating in, and what's the sort of information sharing between those officers who are involved in making communities safe, and maybe what are the new ways that we're using computers and artificial intelligence to help us improve decontamination everywhere?
Yeah, the United Nations Mine Action Service, we have 19 programs in countries and territories around the world. The UN as a whole is a little bit over 30. So the UN is, and we're the Mine Action, United Nations Mine Action has the interagency coordination group for Mine Action, which we help to service and facilitate. And that really is an information exchange. So in this meeting that we're at this week in Geneva, where we have the national directors from all over the world, from every mine affected country, comes in. That's a big part of it, is to share lessons learned, best practices. And the technology is very important, specifically with IEDs, with improvised explosive devices. I mean, we've been working for years in Afghanistan, and we've seen a lot of devices that were used in Afghanistan that show up in other conflict zones. Specifically today, it's in Somalia. We've seen stuff in Iraq. There's an innovation there. There's obviously on the dark web, people have access to figure out who's building what and how are they building it, what type of charges, etc. So you have to stay alert and you have to be following that. And obviously that's not something terribly new for any military out there in the world. The United Nations, we don't particularly do intelligence service things, but we are starting a database now in order to try to bring in academics and the governments that want to share that information in order that we make our people on the ground safer, so that people would have some type of place to go to look at, oh, this is the types of devices I see. They can do photos of it directly and put it up in this database, and then people can look at it from other parts of the world and say immediately, I've seen that, don't touch that wire. I mean, if you want to get it simple, or this is probably how it is, or the charger is going to be, 200 meters away, or it's that kind of thing. And somebody mentioned earlier today when we were speaking about infrared, is that, the technologies that exist out there, they are extremely deadly. It's a little bit different than a landmine where you're just using a metal detector and you're going along and something beeps and you're saying, okay, is that, a pop top, or is that, something more dangerous? When you deal with IEDs, they're 360 degrees. so you don't know where they are. And I mean, there was just an attack recently in Afghanistan, for example, where somebody stuck a charge on the top of the roof of a car, which killed a UN employee. It was UNDP. And that's an example of something which Smit Mitra, this new database that's going to be soft launched today at this meeting, would look into. So what specs do you need for your car roofs when the UN buys vehicles? Because that's obviously a weakness, right? When a car is sitting in traffic and somebody puts a bomb on the roof of it, and nobody thought about that. But there are ways to know if there's devices on a car, magnetic sensors that tell you something's been added to this car. And that's the kind of stuff that we need to know, the United Nations need to know, in order to keep all personnel and all NGOs safe.
It is frightening. You could be totally paranoid. I'm in a radio studio here. I don't want to step foot outside it because it's, you know, I've read The English Patient. I've read, you know, the sort of mindset of somebody who's laying mines in pianos and things. You think, my goodness, this is just extraordinarily frightening and terrifying. And Bob, you were saying earlier that the threat of mines is not going away.
No, I mean, sadly, the IED is a very effective asymmetric form of attack. And the effectiveness of the IED as a technology leveler is now very much understood by the extremists that are employing IEDs. I mean, sadly, that knowledge is now out there. Lee has mentioned, you know, that information is disseminated now across the internet. It is relatively easy now for people with no previous experience or training to acquire the knowledge from the web, to make homemade explosives, and to build quite sophisticated IED initiation systems from scratch, you know, without any external intervention.
So you were suggesting earlier, Bob, that it's not just a question of getting the mines out of the ground, it's a broader approach. Can you maybe explain what that means?
Yeah, certainly. It's insufficient, really, just to deal with the explosive threat itself. When one considers the threat posed by IEDs, you've really got to look at the IED system. So it requires an effective whole-of-government approach, and that is very much based on not just the entity that's dealing with the explosive threat itself, but you've got to look at the forensic organisation that recovers evidence, the analysis of that, and the good police work that's required to identify, locate, arrest, and then process the perpetrators through the judicial system.
And in Libya, this is happening?
It is happening, actually. The Unmasked Libya team has worked quite closely with the Libyan authorities, and we've been trying to develop the forensic skills of the Criminal Investigation Department such that the Libyan police can do this themselves.
Thank you very much, Bob. I think we've pretty much come to the end of this discussion. Very brief look at what the UN Mine Action Service is doing. It's been a delight to have you here, but I'd love to have any final messages or thoughts that you have before you plunge back into the dark recesses of the UN Palais here in Geneva and share more information, which is obviously why you are here.
Simply that clearing the world's landmines problem is achievable. It's very, very achievable. When I started demining in 1993, when the world talked about it being a 1,000-year problem, now we're down to single digits of years with realistic assessments, credible clearance methods. We're winning this fight. Unfortunately, the fight has moved on. The landmine problem is now being replaced by the IED problem. The crux of this issue is ending grievances. If people want to find a way to kill each other, they will do so. But in those countries where the wounds have healed, such as Cambodia, we can get on and complete the job.
Sarah Najeri, Richard Bolter, Edwin Fagimane, Bob Seddon, and Lee Woodyer. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.